Bethany Lutheran College is pleased to sponsor Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio. Bethany Lutheran College is located in the picturesque river town of Mankato, Minnesota, and is committed to making Christian higher education affordable for all with generous financial aid packages available. At Bethany, you'll find stimulating academic programs, a friendly atmosphere, and opportunities to grow both in intellect and in your faith, all within the framework of a supportive Christian environment. For more information, visit us on the web at blc.edu.
As Lincoln warned, when you empower judges or respect the claims of power of judges to do that kind of thing, to engage in that kind of jurisprudence, you give up Republican government. You abandon democracy.
From his perspective, there's no distinction between a person who believes what the Bible teaches about homosexuality and a person who would physically assault a student who identifies himself as gay.
It's like hiding the penicillin for a child in applesauce. The hope is that if we can get you to come and learn about parenting, we're going to sneak in a couple little references to a form of the gospel.
Nebraska Oregon students love Issues, etc.
I know it's very frustrating, it can be, to open the newspaper, to go online, to consume the popular media, and to find your viewpoints unrepresented, or to find your viewpoint misrepresented, or not covered at all, especially when it comes to the coverage of religion. Deeply frustrating. But is it that the media has a completely negative view of religion? That's often what we're tempted to think, but is that true? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Thursday afternoon, March the 26th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We are coming to you from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. Terry Mattingly of GetReligion.org is going to join us for the first half hour. So we're going to talk about media coverage of religious liberty and religion in general. He has an interesting answer to that question I just posed. A little bit later, we'll look at the movie Insurgent. I went to church on Saturday night, heard a young person talking to one of the other pastors about having just seen this movie. They were all a-Twitter about it. Pastor Ted Giese will join us. Then Molly Ziegler-Hemingway will be alongside. We'll talk about Cosmopolitan Magazine's double standard on life in the womb. And Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will join us. We'll go through our series with him, Christ in the Old Testament Today, the familiar ground of Zechariah chapter 9 in advance of Palm Sunday. Our call-in number 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or use our Issues Etc. comment line. If you're one of those beloved on-demand listeners, feel free to do so. 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about media coverage of religion and religious liberty, Terry Mattingly. He's a regular guest director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
I am glad to be here.
We've been talking about this for years now. Is the problem with media coverage of religion as it stands today that the media have a completely negative view of religion?
Well, you know, I've been beating my head on this wall for a long time, and I'm convinced that at least 50% of people who consider themselves religious and cultural conservatives in America believe deep down in their heart that the mainstream press is just violently opposed to religion at all, that they have no respect for it, that they dislike it, not just, you know, way beyond just it gives them sweaty palms or something like that. But I think that's a simplistic notion, and I think it's important. People can't understand the headlines in their local papers. They can understand what they see on the evening news unless they plunge a little deeper into this. And that's something that I got into in a very public way back 14 years ago, and have been arguing with folks about it ever since. Essentially, The newsrooms I served in had lots of people in it that went to church, but very few of them went to conservative churches. There were people there who went to Jewish temples, but there were very few, but there was nobody that went to an Orthodox synagogue. In other words, to use the famous language from the sociologist James Davison Hunter, in, I think, one of the most important books written in recent decades, his book, Culture Wars, The Struggle to Define America, he said, we must understand that America is divided not by religious groups anymore, but into two basic religious camps based on a single question of the nature of truth. And he calls one group the camp of the Orthodox, and the camp of the Orthodox believes that it is possible for God to reveal eternal, transcendent truths. Now, you may struggle to live by them. You may struggle to know what they are, and certainly these groups don't agree on what the transcendent truths are. I mean, an Orthodox Jew and a devout Roman Catholic and a devout Southern Baptist are going to have a lot of things that they disagree with about those truths, but they're all going to say that it is rational and good to believe that there are eternal truths that you are going to defend with your life. He calls this the camp of the Orthodox. On the other side is the people he calls the camp of the progressives. And the camp of the progressive, these are religious believers. They have churches, they have temples, they have, you know, Bibles, they have seminaries, they have entire denominational structures. And the progressive believe that doctrine changes with the time as new truths are revealed by the culture, and that even that God reveals new truths that might even contradict old ones. So truth is not transcendent and eternal. It's an evolving concept. Now, my point is simply that that is a religious point of view. That is not a secular point of view. That is not a religion-less perspective. Yet that is the perspective that I have found dominates most newsrooms that I've been in, especially dominates among people who are religious believers of various kinds. So they view the world through a lens that doesn't say religion is bad. They view the world through a lens that says some religion is bad and some religion is good. Some religion is intolerant. Some religion is tolerant. Some religion is smart. Some religion is dumb. But that doesn't mean they're opposed to all religion. Do you see the distinction?
Yeah. Is this a basic idea that even transcends the issue of the coverage of religion? I mean, we're talking here about whether or not truth as an abiding, unchangeable thing does exist. Is this a stated assumption or one that is unstated?
I think for most people it's unstated, and you very rarely see it pop out into open view. But that's what happened a number of years ago when a writer in the New York Times, who I won't name at this point to drag his name back into this, but in a piece about a battle over abortion, he talked about a man who attacked an abortionist, and he said that the key element of the story was the, quote, consequences of his search for a higher good, sure and unchanging, to sustain him in a fallen world. Now, here comes the big statement. It is a shared, if unspoken, premise of the world that most of us inhabit, that absolutes do not exist, and that people who claim to have found them are crazy, unquote. New York Times, Sunday Magazine.
The operative phrase there being, of course, the world most of us inhabit. What does that mean?
That, I assume, means, writing from the perspective of a guy sitting in the newsroom of the New York Times, I assume that means the world of thinking, powerful, elite Northeastern America, or the world of newsrooms full of people like who work at the New York Times. Now, I'm sure that the writer, to some degree, thought it was the world of other people who are as smart as me. I mean, just like most Baptists think, people like me who believe the Bible as much as I do, you know, without representing that there might be other people who believe the Bible in different ways. But notice he said unstated premise, unspoken premise. But, you know, that people who claim to have found absolute truths are crazy. Now, that is a rare, very strong statement of this progressive point of view. And that is a religious statement. Now, I did a column in 21, which is 2001, which is up on the website now, as a part of my piece, addressing some issues raised in Molly Ziegler-Hemingway's great piece on the Indiana law and coverage of religious liberty. And I zapped back in time to an interview I did with a man named Proctor. Let's see, his first name is Bill Proctor. I was thinking it's William Proctor, but Bill Proctor, who wrote a book called The Gospel According to the New York Times. And in it, he analyzed like 6,000 New York Times articles and tried to find out what the religious message of the New York Times was. And I think it's very crucial that he called the New York Times not a secular institution, but he called it one that believed it was actually on kind of a mission from God, a mission kind of to promote a world view that will help improve the world, make it a better place, that it had a mission in the modern world. But what he said was the leaders of the world's most influential magazine, what they condemn is not religious faith, but what he called the sin of religious certainty, unquote. The belief that there can be one truth in this world on any topic. So it very explicitly evokes the division within the work of James Davison Hunter, et cetera. I quoted him at that time saying, here's the irony of it all. The agenda the Times advocates is based on a set of absolute truths. Its leaders are absolutely sure that the religious groups they consider intolerant and judgmental are absolutely wrong, especially traditional Roman Catholics, evangelicals, and most Orthodox Jews. They are just as convinced that the religious groups that they consider tolerant and progressive are absolutely right. So we've got a philosophical problem here, which is, you know, the absolute truth that there's no absolute truths. And you can spin your head around that conundrum for a long time, and some people have done so. But the key point here, again, is it is just as much a statement of religious faith to back this progressive approach to doctrine as it is to back the Orthodox approach to doctrine.
So
now,
go ahead.
What I can hear people thinking out there, hang on one second, what I hear people out there thinking is, yeah, but that progressive one goes along better with the secular world. And it does on some issues, and on some it doesn't.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of religion and religious liberty on this Thursday afternoon, March the 26th. When we come back, it sounds like he's not talking about a bias against religion, but a religious bias. Stay tuned.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for March is a giant poster of Luther's Small Catechism. It's perfect for display in your home, Christian day school, or Sunday school. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase the Small Catechism giant poster by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. 3040. The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for March, The Small Catechism Giant Poster.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Steadfast Lutherans. People who believe the law condemns everyone and should be preached to the fullest. People who believe the gospel is for everyone and should be preached to its sweetest. Traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice deliver every Sunday this law and gospel, that Christ was crucified for us sinners. To all who received him, who believed in his name, the Gospel of John says, he gave the right to become children of God. To see how Steadfast Lutherans preserves this good news for everyone, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Thursday afternoon, we're talking about media coverage of religion and religious liberty. Terry Mattingly of the On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate is our guest. Given what you said so far here, Terry, it sounds like when it comes to the media, we're not talking about a bias against religion per se. We're talking about a religious bias.
Yes, that's bluntly stated. It is a religious bias. That the New York Times is on a crusade, and it opposes people who don't share its approach to doctrine on many of these issues. They have a doctrinal bias against people who believe that there are eternal truths on these issues.
How pervasive beyond the insulated world of the New York Times and the Eastern Seaboard is it?
Well, I mean, I think you could say, you know, as the old saying goes, you know, take your typical poli-sci department anywhere in America, or your most law schools. I think what you're hearing here, when people talk about folks who read the editorial pages of the New York Times as if they are holy scripture, that's a pretty large slice of elite American life, wouldn't you say? That statement alone?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so there they are. Now, are there others? Are there, I guess it's conceivable that there are people who hold that point of view and don't read the New York Times. But the main point here is that the New York Times in the past wasn't openly advocating position. This just brings us back to the term you and I have discussed many times, which is Kellerism, the term I've created in reference to Bill Keller, the recently retired editor of the New York Times, who in a speech in Austin said that his paper did not slant the news to the left except on moral and cultural issues. Now, if you stop and think about it, what issues have divided America the most in the last 30 years, other than, say, the Iraq War, you know, wars in the Middle East? What have been the dominating issues in American public life over the last 30 years, certainly when it comes time to fight at the Supreme Court? They have all been moral and cultural issues. American politics has been dominated by matters of culture and morality in recent decades. So the New York Times isn't slanting the news except on the stories that matter the most.
What kind of reporting does it lead to, not just religion reporting, but reporting in general? Because obviously, truth is not the coin of the realm only among the religious. If you have a bias against absolute truth or a truth that remains absolute over time, that is going to affect your reporting in other areas, isn't it?
Yeah. Someone that represents a very bright and articulate point of view on the religious left would be the CBS commentator Bill Moyers. But Bill Moyers had a classic way of expressing it when he said, your typical journalist is tone deaf to the music of religion. They're ignorant of it, but they just don't even hear it. Now, that sounds more negative, but they don't hear the power that certain forms of religion have for certain people. Now, he made that comment to me years ago when he had just returned from Iran. Now, this was during, you know, even greater periods of conflict involving the nation of Iran than now, although Iran is way back in the news. And Moyer said that he thought many journalists and many diplomats just were having trouble taking how literally and seriously Muslims in that part of the world take their faith. In other words, the Muslims who are the small percentage of Muslims, maybe, who are at the leadership of the Islamic State, have a completely different approach to the Quran and Sharia law and the basics of their faith than Muslims who teach at Georgetown in the poli-sci department. They're both Muslims, but there is some transcendent difference between how they approach the very authority of their faith and how they're supposed to act on it and how literal they're supposed to be. There are plenty of other variations within Islam. I think we had a piece you and I discussed concerning Nigeria earlier this year. I think we found like six different Muslim positions on what's going on with Boko Haram in Nigeria. I mean, this is an incredibly complex world faith, and it is simplistic, stupid, and negative to try to view Islam through any one description or device. But the point, again, is if you don't believe that a transcendent, revealed, authoritative concept of religion exists, or you believe that anybody who thinks that way is crazy, that is going to influence how you cover the Middle East, how you cover education, how you cover health care, you know, and a host of other issues. I think it's significant that even though most of the battle in Washington over the health care bill was about economics and how big it was and how much power it gave to the federal government, et cetera, et cetera, but when push came to shove, and it came right down to the final votes to pass Obamacare, what was the issue and who were the people that had to be forced to cast the votes to make it passed? Do you remember?
No. Refresh my memory.
It was Catholic Democrats who, from the Midwest, some of whom it ended up costing them their districts, who were muscled to vote for Obamacare with its language on funding on abortion issues, and they were promised they would get like an authoritative waiver or conscience clause or whatever, and then that didn't come through to the degree they expected. But when push came to shove, it all ended up in about 2 weeks of very intense debate on Capitol Hill about religion and about the doctrines of the Roman Catholic Church, and whether Roman Catholics should actually, in their public life, take steps that would contradict their own faith and their own beliefs. The very same kinds of issues rose up again. And now what do we have going to the U.S. Supreme Court? We have the Conscience Clause issues related to the HHS mandate, to where we have a bunch of nuns who, you know, who work completely with the homeless, the elderly, and the impoverished, the little sisters of the poor, you know, are about to be run out of the United States because they won't bow down on issues related to contraceptive devices and a bunch of other things that they don't want to provide as a part of the health care, and they don't want to cooperate with the government in providing it either, because they believe that violates a transcendent, revealed truth through the authority structure of the Roman Catholic Church. That, by definition, in that famous quote from the Times, would make them crazy.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of religion, and when we come back, that brings us right back around to the subject of religious liberty. Stay tuned.
Holy Cross Lutheran Church, Moline, Illinois, invites you to join us in receiving the Lord's gifts in word and sacrament. Sunday services are at 8:15 and 10:45 a.m., with Bible class and Sunday school at 9:30 a.m. We are located in the Quad Cities at 4107 21st Avenue, Moline, Illinois. Welcome in the name of our Lord.
O Lord,
listen to chapel services live weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana at issuesetc.org. Morning chapel from Kramer Chapel, live weekday mornings 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
Do you have a student finishing up 8th grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
I'm not a Christian, but I listen to your show because actually you do have some interesting topics.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
You believe that there's not one error in the Bible. That's intellectually infantile. You also believe that Jesus is coming again. You promote extremely sexually repressive views.
The Issues Etc. comment line, available 24/7, 618-223-8382.
Have fun waiting for Jesus to return. Got news for you. He ain't coming back.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Pilgrim Lutheran, Santa Monica, California. Emmanuel Lutheran, Terre Haute, Indiana. Trinity Lutheran, San Angelo, Texas. Trinity Lutheran and Emmanuel Lutheran, Holloway, Minnesota. St. John Lutheran, Schaumburg, Illinois. Our Savior Lutheran, Pipestone, Minnesota. Real Lutheran Fellowship, Rochester, Minnesota. Living Word Lutheran Church, The Woodlands, Texas. St. James Lutheran, Logansport, Indiana. St. John's Lutheran, State Center, Iowa, and Trinity Lutheran, West Chicago, Illinois. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support, the Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. A few more minutes here with Terry Mattingly of GetReligion.org. We're talking about media coverage of religious liberty. Giving everything we've said up to this point, I guess it raises the natural question, Terry. When it comes to the specific subject of religious liberty that you stepped into before the break, what do you think are the presuppositions of many major market reporters?
Well, now see, that's what's really fascinating. I got an email earlier today from someone saying, you guys really need to do an article that contrasts the language that was used in press reports when the Religious Freedom Restoration Act passed before, back in the Clinton-Gore era, a period of time when we had a great sense of unity in the church-state coalition in terms of protecting the religious freedom of minority forms of religion. In other words, when religious liberty was Native Americans being able to use peyote in their religious rituals, or religious liberty was, here's a recent case, religious liberty is the ability of a Muslim man to grow a beard in prison. The amicus briefs on that one at the U.S. Supreme Court, that ran the entire gamut of American religion, from the Southern Baptist Convention to the Unitarians, everybody was in agreement again. What has happened, and a lot of people on both the legal left and right have said this, so this is not, you know, a strictly conservative perspective. What has happened is that one transcendent issue, even more emotional than abortion, has arisen that has just buried that earlier church-state coalition, and that is the issue of gay marriage and of the special protected status for gays and lesbians in general. The actual legal civil rights status of homosexuality and people whose lives are touched by it, defined by it, whatever, that has become the issue that has transcended everything else in the church-state landscape. There was a famous moment when that great Catholic theologian Maureen Dowd, of the New York Times, of course, she was writing about Bill Clinton, and this was the column in which Maureen Dowd went from attacking Bill Clinton for his sexual escapades, etc., to defending him. And she said it was when she realized that conservatives might actually manage to impeach this guy, and that if that happened, that would be really, really bad for abortion rights and for a couple of other issues that really mattered to her and to people like her, that kind of language again. And then she used a phrase that just locked into my mind. She said, these cultural conservatives have no sense of proportion. They're, quote, trying to repeal Woodstock, unquote. I thought that one little phrase brilliantly stated what we're talking about here. What we have is a collision between the Ten Commandments and other forms of revealed transcendent truths and the revealed transcendent experiential truths of Woodstock and an entire era that was defined essentially in terms of, hey, just try it.
So if we realize that, just to take the New York Times as the example par excellence, that is, the problem is not a secularization in the classical sense of the word, but really a postmodernization.
Well, there are a lot of secular people, you know, in big newsrooms. Don't get me wrong there. But my point was that there are plenty of people in newsrooms who consider themselves religious believers. And for them, it's the issue of good religion versus bad religion. And that people can't view the press as some sort of 2001 monolith of people who hate God. That's just not true. Now, it might be that those newsrooms are dominated by people who, on a couple of key moral and doctrinal issues, all share a point of view. And it's a point of view that leans toward the doctrinal left and to this progressive religious worldview. But even that didn't happen necessarily because of some sort of conspiracy. It happened because our elite universities tend to be dominated by those worldviews. And a lot of our other elite institutions do as well. And I like to mention, and you've let me point this out before, it certainly doesn't help that out of all of the religious colleges and universities in America that I have had contact with, there might be 20 that take journalism seriously at all. And let me put a word out here, folks. Name for me a Missouri Synod Lutheran university with a strong journalism program.
What does that tell you?
It tells me that the two halves of the First Amendment don't respect each other, and that there are probably just as many Christians who hate journalists as there are journalists who hate Christians. And that's not a realistic way of looking at our world. It's also bad theology if you believe that God is the God of all of creation, even, dare I say it, journalism.
So finally, Terry, what caveat would you issue to someone who says, okay, I think I've understood what you're saying here. We're not talking about a bias against religion, but a religious bias. How then should I better consume the news such as it is that the media gives me on religious issues? What caveats would you issue to someone who now realizes they can't simply write this off as a religion-hating media?
Excellent. Excellent. Pastors should be telling their people to write, you know, waves of letters to the editor. They should go down to their local newspaper and request a chance to have lunch with the editor and the editorial boards. And they should ask people not to report the news from their perspective. They should ask those people to report the news in a balanced and accurate fashion that treats people on both sides of these issues with respect and dignity, the way they're supposed to, not under the doctrines of the Bible, but under the doctrines of journalism. In other words, don't go down to your local newspaper and call your editor a sinner. Go down to the local newspaper and ask a question that he or she will take way more seriously, or should: are they a journalistic heretic? That's a more constructive question. And meanwhile, ask your denomination why they're not doing more to find out if there are any young people who have the skills to compete at the higher levels of journalism in our culture. A little bit of intellectual diversity in our newsrooms would help a great deal.
Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
On the other side of the break, we're going to do a little review of the movie Insurgent, which is the second in a series of books and films very popular with young people on this Thursday afternoon, March the 25th. Pastor Ted Giese will be our guest. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway will join us to talk about Cosmopolitan Magazine's Double Standard on Life in the Womb. And then it's Christ in the Old Testament with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. Stay tuned.
Today, the biblical account of creation is under attack in the popular media, in our schools, and even many churches and seminaries.
Dr. David Menton of Answers in Genesis, talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
We are told that the evidence for evolution is so compelling that the church and its clergy and teachers must accept evolution or be dismissed as fools. But I will show that the scientific case for evolution is not compelling, and that evolution is incompatible with biblical Christianity and the gospel of Jesus Christ.
You can hear and meet Dr. David Menton making the case for creation Friday, June 19th and Saturday, June 20th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Streaming 24/7 sacred music and talk stations from a 500-square-foot office in Collinsville, Illinois, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Hey, St. Louis. How would you like to achieve your fitness goals in a fun and supportive atmosphere? Hi, this is Kevin Reisick, owner and operator of Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. We offer adult boot camps throughout the week. These camps include cardiovascular conditioning, muscular strength and endurance training, balance and coordination activities, and more. For more information, give me a call at 618-670-6952, Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois, 618-670-6952.
What do lay people owe their pastors? I've written an article in the latest Issues Etc. journal titled, What Hearers Owe Their Pastors, Receive the Gift. And you can read it by subscribing to the online Issues Etc. journal. Just click the red subscription button on the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. The Wittenberg Trail feature details Jim Pierce's journey from Pentecostalism, fundamentalism, and atheism to confessional Lutheranism. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.